Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Judge Connolly, Judge Slater, Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals this 22nd day of February 2023. We are conducting our hearings on the Zoom platform this morning in an effort to minimize any interruptions caused by the winter storm. And thank you to the attorneys. Sorry, I just got a message on Zoom. Thank you for accommodating our request at the last minute to reschedule the hearing to the Zoom format. I assume each of you is familiar with our format, same as if we were in court. Each side will have 15 minutes for primary argument. Appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Up in the left-hand corner of the screen, you'll see the timing mechanism. Please be mindful and watch for judges to attempt to interrupt you with questions if they should so desire. And would each of you be sure to introduce yourself for the record before beginning each leg of your argument? With that, we will hear from counsel for appellant. You may proceed.
Good morning. Please the court. I am Sarah Martin. I represent the appellant, Jason Peterson. Mr. Peterson entered a guilty plea to one count of failing to register as a predatory offender in February of 2019. During the plea colloquy, Mr. Peterson acknowledged that he knew he was required to register as a predatory offender, but he repeatedly explained that he did not register on the offense date because he had not received the registration paperwork from the BCA. He said he thought that the BCA would send the paperwork. He said they usually sent the paperwork. When asked, "Did you register?" he responded, "I didn't have the paperwork." He said he called the BCA and asked for the paperwork because it wasn't sent to him. Mr. Peterson's plea was not accurate because he did not admit to knowingly violating the registration statute. A plea is not valid if it is not accurate. A plea for failure to register is not accurate if the defendant fails to admit that he knew he was violating the law at the time of the violation. The knowledge needs to be contemporaneous with the violation. If a defendant is confused or misinformed about the process at the time of the violation, then it is not a knowing violation. This case is like McCulloch. Mr. McCulloch admitted that he knew he had a duty to register. He admitted that he had been told at one time that he needed to register within 24 hours of moving. He admitted that he had signed papers saying that he would register within 24 hours of moving. He admitted that at the time of the plea, he knew he had only 24 hours. But at the time he failed to register, he thought he had a week. The factual basis did not establish a knowing violation because the knowledge and the violation must occur at the same time.
Ms. Martin, I'm having a bit of a hard time with the analogy with Mikulak, because here, isn't it true that he admitted he understood he needed to register? So it wasn't a question of not having to register. I understand the point you're making that he kept saying he was waiting for paperwork, but whereas Mikulak said specifically at the time of the plea hearing, he was not aware that he had that seven. He learned it that day, or I think the phrase he said is, "Well, now I know." So the point being is at there was never an elicitation from him that at the time of the move that he was aware that he had that 24-hour period. Whereas here, isn't it true that at no time did your client indicate he was unaware of the obligation to register?
That's correct. But in McCulloch, he also admitted that he knew that he had to register. He was just confused about a part of the process. And that's why it's similar to this case. Mr. Peterson knew he had to register, but he was confused about what the process was. And that's clear from the fact that he repeatedly said things like, "I thought they would have sent the paperwork. They usually sent the paperwork." And then again, when asked why he didn't register, he said, "I didn't have the paperwork." So that's
what do we make of the fact that I believe he said something like, "Well, yes, I should have called to ask, or I should have followed up."
That does not establish that he knew at the time of the violation that he had to register even without the paperwork. Again, that makes it similar to McCulloch and McCain, the other case that I sent in the supplemental authority last week. It establishes that at the time of the plea, he understood that what he should have done was call earlier. But in no way during the plea did he say, I understood back then, back in 2017, that I should have called the BCA earlier.
Okay, so you're really asking for us to hold as a matter of law that if somebody knows they have a registration obligation, but they're confused regarding the mechanics, in other words, what form they need to send, the date they need to send it, then it's not a knowing violation.
That is
in case
correct.
You're wondering, Ms. Martin, that's a trap.
No, but I mean, it seems like that's a slippery slope because now everybody just comes to court and says, well, yes, I knew I had to register. Yes, I've been doing it for 10 years, but oh, I forgot what the process was. So I really didn't knowingly violate.
I think the distinction, Your Honor, is between a plea and a trial. And if it is a trial and someone says that, the finder of fact is free to disregard that. The finder of fact is free to say, I don't believe you when you said I didn't have the paperwork, or I didn't believe you when you said you forgot that you only had 24 hours to register. And that's what distinguishes this case from the cases that the state cites, Walker and Larson. Those cases involve the sufficiency of the evidence following a trial. A trial is different because a defendant does not need to admit every single element. The elements can be established by other evidence, and the finder of fact can make credibility determinations and disregard portions of the defendant's testimony. But in a plea, the defendant needs to admit to every element, and every element in this case involves a knowing violation, meaning that they understood their acts at the time they did it, or their inaction at the time they failed to act contemporaneously, that they knew at that time it was a violation. And that is what is missing in this case.
Ms. Martin, all of these cases that have been cited, they all sort of have very, not unique perhaps, but specific facts. And, in McCain that you sent us, when he was asked, well, did you know at the time you were supposed to contact Minnesota if you left? He stated, I don't think I did, but I do now. Now, in this case, you're right. He's saying, it says, he never received the paperwork that was usually sent to him prior to registering. And am I correct then? He's saying he appeared to believe, well, now this is interesting. This is, I'm assuming your words, not his. He appeared to believe receipt of paperwork was necessary. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct.
I think it would be a different case if he said on the record, I only thought I had to register if they sent me paperwork, and I was waiting for them to send me the paperwork, and I would have filled it out. Now, that's not quite what we have here. Is that a fair statement, Ms. Martin?
I would agree that he did not use those exact words, but the fact that he says, I didn't receive the paperwork over and over and over again, suggests that he believed that, it's clear the reason he didn't register is because he didn't have the paperwork, or at least that's what he's saying, is that he didn't have the paperwork. So given the number of times that he says that, I think it's essentially equivalent to saying, I didn't register at the time because I didn't have the paperwork.
And does the record tell us, how many years he'd been registering successfully? I mean, it was several years, right?
It was several years. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it was several years. And he said, usually they send the paperwork.
So what you're saying is, if this case went to a jury or a court trial, the finder of fact could say, we don't believe that. You knew, you're guilty, or yeah, we accept your explanation. You didn't actually know at the time that you were violating. But in the context of a plea, we can't have those credibility determinations. We need an express admission that I knew I was supposed to register at that time, regardless of whether or not I received paperwork, and I failed to meet my registration obligation.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's not too difficult of a rule to enforce, okay?
Exactly, and I think that is very clear from the cases on guilty plea withdrawals. Raleigh and McCulloch, McCain from this court, all stand for that same proposition, that the guilty plea itself, the plea colloquy, needs to establish every element of the offense.
What would have happened if the state had introduced evidence that indicated they had mailed him the paperwork? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they had like some certified receipt requested. Would that make a difference if he's still saying I didn't get the or they never? They usually send the paperwork. What if the state had proved they had sent the paperwork?
In the context of a trial, absolutely. I mean, that would be a fact.
The constants of a plea. Let's say when he said that, the state took a break, and you know, found somebody who said, we mailed him the paperwork. What happens then and then he accepts the plea. He doesn't say anything else like, oh, I guess I did get it. But they introduce someone who says that, and he keeps it. Well, you know, I didn't get it. What happens then?
I guess I've never seen a plea come in like that before. I mean, other than like a glut.
Well, then you've never been in Hennepin County because we try to fix things as they appear.
Right. I guess that if that, Raleigh does say that if there's evidence in the record, so I suppose it would be kind of a hybrid glut slash straight plea. Perhaps that would be sufficient, but that's certainly not the case that we have here. We don't have anything other than what the defendant's factual basis is. And his factual basis is saying, I usually receive the paperwork, I didn't have the paperwork.
The factual basis is, I never received the paperwork and I should have contacted them, meaning the BCA, sooner. And I didn't. I should have contacted the BCA for the paperwork. I thought they were going to mail it to me, but they never did so. I mean, this does seem different than the other cases because he's telling us why he didn't do it, but he's also saying, I was aware that I had to do it and I should have contacted them to get the paperwork I needed to do it. I mean, isn't this sort of a gray area where the district court judge gets to make the decision? Because although the district court judge can't make credibility determinations, the purpose of the accuracy requirement is to make sure that a person is not convicted of an offense that they could not be convicted of at trial. So if the judge hears that, and then the judge also hears the state say in questioning the defendant, the letters were mailed to your house, Mr. Peterson. We have evidence that the letters were mailed to your house. If the letters were mailed to your house, did you return them? Answer, no. State, okay, but you were aware that you had a requirement to register. Yes, I did. So why can't we look at that in its entirety and say, well, if this is the record, we don't think he's admitted to something that couldn't be proven beyond a reasonable doubt at trial. Because that is the standard, right?
That is the standard, but he still has to admit to every element of the offense. And I think
we have case law that says, you know, as to every element of the offense, you know, we don't have to have an express acknowledgement and admission of every element. You know, we kind of do look more to the record as a whole to ensure the ultimate question is answered as it should be, which is he's not admitting a crime greater than that which he could be convicted of at trial.
I understand that. I think that in your hypothetical, if the judge had pushed a little bit more and said, you know, did you understand at the time that you failed to register that you should have contacted them earlier, then that would have remedied the problem in this case.
Okay. But we all wish they'd do it perfectly, but we don't see a lot of perfect up here. And we have to make decisions based on the record, whether or not we think somebody's, you know, really been convicted of a crime they shouldn't be. And that's why I asked whether you're asking for a rule of law, because if this comes down to what's the rule of law, well, then it's just like, okay, the facts are or are not good enough. But you're saying it's not a rule of law. It's something that would be decided by a jury if the case were taken to trial. So what I'm wondering is, if it's not a rule of law, it's something the jury could accept or reject. why can't the district court do the same thing based on the principle that the purpose of the accuracy requirement is to ensure that the record shows a person's not being convicted of a greater offense than they could be at trial?
Again, that just gets back to the overwhelming case law that a plea needs to be accurate, and to be accurate, they need to admit to every element of the offense. To answer your question as regarding a rule of law, I think I'm not asking for a new rule of law. The rule of law is simply that a plea needs to be accurate in order to be valid. And in this case, it wasn't, because Mr. Peterson's responses to the question suggest that at a minimum, he was confused about the process at the time of the violation. Mr. Peterson's guilty plea was not accurate, and he asked this court to reverse the post-conviction order. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now hear from the state. Could you introduce yourself for the record before beginning your argument?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the panel. My name is Sean McCarthy with the Rice County Attorney's Office. I appear today on behalf of the state of Minnesota, the respondent in this proceeding. The panel's questions during the direct argument nail everything that I put in my brief and everything I wanted to tell you. Accordingly, I want to highlight a couple of things and then just open up to questions and discussion if there are things the panel is concerned about overall. The key, as Judge Larkin, you nailed this. It's the language is on transcript page 10, lines 6 and 7. That's the transcript reference if you're a note-taking kind of person or one of your clerks is an observer here. Transcript page 10, lines 6 and 7 is the key distinguishing fact. Judge Connolly, as you pointed out, these cases all have their own little unique facts. The facts here are different from McCulloch and different from McCain. McCulloch and McCain are the cases where the person said during the plea, well, I know now what the law is. But by saying that, they were also explaining, but I didn't know back at the time the act was occurring. The statement here is, I didn't have the paperwork. I should have contacted the BCA sooner, and I didn't. It's the same thing you read yourself, Judge Larkin. That line shows that the defendant acknowledged that at the time of the act, he knew it was his duty to register, and that he needed to take affirmative conduct to register. The other cases that appellant relies on were such that they never acknowledged that it was their duty because the duty had never come into an existence.
Mr. McCarthy, can I ask you that? Couldn't that also be read that I should have contacted them sooner to send me the paperwork? Part of what my broader question is, we do have the case law that when a defendant negates an earlier admission to an element, that essentially washes that out. And so Judge Connolly well put, we don't have the explicit statement that, well, I thought I needed to register when they sent it to me. But how much different is that they usually send me paperwork. I should have called them earlier. And then I'm adding as an interpretation to send me the paperwork, because then I know I got to register, but they never sent it to me. So
I think if I may.
Yes.
I think the difference there, Your Honor, is I should have contacted the BCA sooner, not they didn't send it to me. It's I should have called them. The key here is the duty to register is on the defendant. He's the one that's got the affirmative act. And here's the other thing. There's no requirement that he use a set of paperwork at all. He's the one that's got to fulfill his duty to register. That's right out of the statute and right out of multiple Supreme Court and Court of Appeals decisions.
You know, using one question I agree,
we're kind of splitting hairs a little bit here, but that's our job at this point. Is this case more like these ones or those ones?
You know, I had a question as to the paperwork. I mean, so this form or this paperwork they send, I mean, is it in the form of an affidavit where you sign it and you say, I hereby under oath say, I'm now living at, 5111 Jones Street. And that way, what is the nature of the paperwork? Is it some sort of affirmation so that then, If he's not living there, you've nailed him because he said he was. What does this paperwork look like?
Your Honor, the paperwork follows the statute, which is you just got to register. And registration is here's where I live, here's where I work, here's the cars I'm driving, all those details that are part of the predatory offender registration scheme. You got to keep those up to date.
Then he signs it, but it's not under oath. He just says, I am now living at this address. I am now driving this car. Sincerely yours, Francis Connolly. Then that's it?
That's correct. I didn't know Your Honor was registered, but you know, I understand.
Well, you know, we try to keep that secret up here, but since I got my last election, I guess I'm clear, home free now. So,
yeah. Your Honor, follow up on that. So, as I understand the law, there's no requirement that any specific form be used. A person could just write this on a sheet of paper and deliver it.
That's correct.
So he didn't need to have the. I mean, the paperwork is provided as a convenience and in an effort, I assume, to ensure that people comply, but use of that paperwork is not mandated.
That's exactly correct. As a matter of fact, the last page of respondent's brief cites to, not the last page, but the page 12 cites to State v. Larson, unpublished case from this court from 2019. And that was the issue. Did it have to be certain paperwork or not? And the court looked at the statute, said it does not have to be a certain affidavit or a certain form or a certain format. You just got to update the information in whatever method you can use to get it to those folks.
You know, Mr. McCarthy, when the first time someone registers, and I recall this from the cases I presided over, would there be an explanation of all the rights and responsibilities? Do you know, is that explained in the initial document they signed specifically that while we may send you forms, it's your obligation to do it. You can do it in any method you want. Just let us know, sort of a thing. So are they told that with a signature at the end? The reason I'm asking is it seems like a bit of a, at least sympathetic argument, if not a legal one, defense that if every year they're sending one, and then this year they didn't send one, that someone doesn't send it in, at least in a timely manner, if at all. If they're just orally told by a probation agent or a sheriff's deputy, well, by the way, you can send anything in when they're getting these forms with an official BCA caption on it. It seems fairly obvious that, well, that's what I need to do. I want to get the right form. I want to do it right. And all of a sudden now it's not coming. So I just wonder how well known that is to individuals that you can do any form. I'm, you know, they're not carrying the Larson case in their back pocket, I suspect, to know that.
And Your Honor, my straightforward answer to that is, my understanding is the forms that the BCA provides, that, you know, they literally, you have to sign it in a couple of different spots. You initial a whole bunch of spots, multiple pages. All three of you have probably seen those at some point in the past. And it's the same process every year. But the key is, the very first line is, I have a duty to register. It's incumbent upon the individual to do the registration process, to reach out to the BCA, to reach out to law enforcement, to reach out to whatever entity they can reach out to make sure that they get this done. It's their job to make this happen. And so I think you raise a good point, and it is a sympathetic point, but it's not the legal requirement. As the court said in Larson, the legal requirement is you got to update your registration information. There's nothing in the statute, nothing in the law that says you have to do it a particular way in a particular form. And as Judge Larkin pointed out, if we start going down this line about a person confused about the process, if that's good enough to undo a plea, it's going to radically change the landscape of the law in this area. Accordingly, the state would sum up like this, again, unless the panel has other questions. The law is pretty well developed in this area. We have lots and lots of litigation. The couple of cases that appellant relies on, McCulloch and McCain, were very specific cases where the statements of the individual made it very clear that individual thought they were in compliant with the law previously. The statement here at page 10 of the transcript is, I knew I should have contacted the BCA sooner and I didn't. He didn't say I knew. I was paraphrasing there, but the defendant in this case, the appellant herein, knew it was his job to fulfill the registration requirements, and he failed to do so. Judge Slater, did I answer the court's question as best I could under the circumstances?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Does the panel have additional questions for the respondent? If not, I'll defer the remainder of my time. I'm sure you all have plenty of things to do and maybe places to be that might involve shoveling snow at some point.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. We'll hear Thank rebuttal you. Argument from appellant's attorney. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to respond to one point regarding the paperwork and the Larson case. It is irrelevant that the paperwork is not the triggering event for registration. The key question is what Mr. Peterson knew in March of 2017. And if a defendant is confused or misinformed about the process at the time of the violation, it's not a knowing violation. That is clearly established through case law, and I'm not asking for a new rule. I'm just asking this court to apply the existing law.
Ms. Martin, what are we to make of, in following up to an earlier question, so he's asked, okay, you're claiming you didn't get the letters were mailed to your house, not in March, they weren't. But then the state says, the letters were mailed to your house, Mr. Peterson, we have evidence that the letters were mailed to your house. If the letters were mailed to your house, did you return them? No. Now, why isn't that, you know, and then, you know, okay, but you were aware you had a requirement to register. Yes, I did. Why isn't that little portion, you know, good enough?
I think probably the problem is with the form of the question. If the letters were sent to your house, did you, I mean, he's just simply affirming that he did not send in any registration paperwork, but he's throughout the plea saying, I didn't receive the paperwork. They usually send me the paperwork.
Thank you.
Ms. Martin, could I ask you, you're using the comparison, and I understand it's a good one, the distinction between a trial and a fact finder's credibility finding, but would not the state have a valid relevance objection to that evidence of whether the paperwork was sent? And if that's true, doesn't that bring us full circle to it's not an element that applies to an accuracy claim?
I believe that the paperwork being sent would definitely be relevant evidence at trial, and I'm sure that it would be, if he had a trial on this, it is something that they would, you know, introduce the letters that were sent. So I don't know that there would be a relevancy objection to that. You know, the question is what Mr. Peterson knew at the time of the at the time of the conduct. And what he makes very clear during his plea is that he didn't have the paperwork. He's asked repeatedly, did you register? And he continually responds, I didn't have the paperwork. So that suggests very clearly that he believed in his mind that was the triggering event for the registration. Again, if the defendant is confused or misinformed about the process, his action is not a knowing violation. That is very clear in cases from this court and from the Minnesota Supreme Court. And Mr. Peterson's guilty plea, therefore, was not accurate, and he is asking this court to reverse the court's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you to the attorneys for your briefing and argument this morning. The matter is submitted and you'll have our decision well within the 90 days required by statute. That concludes this hearing.